Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. With Tuesday marking the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War, we begin with an examination of the principal proponent and architect of that war, Dick Cheney, who is the subject of a new Showtime documentary, The World According to Dick Cheney. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was Colin Powell's chief of staff in the first George W. Bush term, joins us to discuss how Bush's presidency was staffed, then captured from within by Cheney, who deceived and manipulated Bush, leading to today's bitter estrangement between the two. Then we'll examine the banking meltdown in Cyprus that has revived concerns about the viability of the Eurozone. Dimitri Papadimitriou, the president of the Levy Economics Institute, joins us to discuss how a tax imposed on bank deposits in Cyprus in return for an EU bailout has backfired, with furious depositors threatening a run on the banks that have been closed until Thursday. We will also look into the exposure Russian companies and individuals have in troubled banks in Cyprus, where banking assets are 8 times the size of the country's economy. Then finally, we will speak with Edward France, a presidential historian at the University of Indianapolis and author of The Door of Hope, Republican Presidents and the First Southern Strategy. We will discuss the autopsy report issued Monday by the Republican National Committee that described the Republicans as scary, narrow-minded, out of touch, and the party of stuffy old men. Joining us now is Lawrence Wilkerson, who's a retired United States Army colonel and former chief of staff to the United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, he went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace in Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And the documentary, the Showtime documentary, The World According to Dick Cheney, shows a man who is in his own world. He's serene, confident, and has no regrets, no doubts, and is in, I think, in denial. However, are we in Dick Cheney's world? That's my problem.
Let me say, first of all, that in October 2005, I came out and talked about a secret cabal, indicating, of course, that there was more than one person in it. I think this Showtime documentary, which was basically a one-man show, illustrates I was wrong. The cabal was Dick Cheney. I'm sure there were other people who helped and aided and abetted him, but it seems to me, if he's telling the truth in that documentary, he was not just president of the United States for security and foreign policy. He was president of the United States for almost everything that happened. So the cabal was one person, Dick Cheney. Aiming at your question, I'm truly concerned that there are lots of people out there who, on various issues which he has broached, actually agree with him. For example, recent polls show that the percentage of Americans who believe that torture has some utility, especially in national security situations, has risen from around 51% to 61%. So clearly, the answer to your question is yes, there is some resonance with the kinds of things that he brings out with the American people, which is kind of alarming.
But what about how the American people feel about the Iraq War? Surely, given that a recent study from Brown University says that 189,000 people died from causes directly related to that war, including 6,650 members of the U.S. Armed Forces and at least 123,000 to 134,000 Iraqi civilians at an estimated cost to the U.S. taxpayer of at least $2.1 trillion. Nobody thinks that, I don't think, that Iraq was a great success. And frankly, my understanding is that there's going to be another Iraq war soon when Syria falls, and that will be the catalyst that completely unravels Iraq itself.
Now you're back to a different point, I think, and I think you're on to something. I think you're right. I was just out in Oklahoma, for example, speaking to a group. And by the way, Oklahoma is the only state of the 50 states in which every single precinct voted for Mitt Romney. So I was in the heart of red meat country, as it were. And what I found out there was an extraordinary war weariness. They're sick and tired of America defining itself by war and by the military instrument. And second, the fiscal irresponsibility of these wars. That is to say, as you indicated, the trillions of dollars that we've dumped down the drain. These issues concern even what is basically a red state. So, yes, there is deep concern over what the United States did with regard to Iraq and increasing concern over what we're doing in Afghanistan. Both situations seem to be money drains and seem to be leading to no real ends.
Again, I'm speaking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who was the Chief of Staff to the former United States Secretary of State Colin Powell in the first Bush term. Now, it was clear to me from the documentary, and it's, to some extent I had a feeling for this, but it came out so much more clearly in this documentary. But first of all, when the Florida recount was going on, and I guess George W. Bush himself was sort of in a state of confusion or in a kind of holding pattern, Dick Cheney, the vice president, was busily building a government. He went around and recruited everybody. They were his people. They owed him. And George W. Bush literally walked into a White House that was completely captured by Cheney from day one. Is that your understanding?
That is my understanding. I think that's absolutely true. I also think that Dick Cheney engineered himself into being the head of George Bush's vice presidential search committee. And then, of course, engineered himself into being, the person that committee found to be vice president. Dick Cheney is a bureaucratic entrepreneur of the first order. Dick Cheney put a network in the Bush administration, including John Bolton at the State Department, I'm sorry to say, that could then answer to him come hell or high water. And they did so. They had a vision. They had a strategy for implementing that vision, and they were utterly ruthless in carrying out that strategy. And frankly, they beat the hell out of the rest of us for at least 3 years until we finally wised up to what they were doing.
But how did he manage to get his own National Security Council? What was Condoleezza Rice doing?
Good question. She certainly wasn't managing the decision-making process, which is the first job of the National Security Advisor. She was getting closer and closer to the president so she could keep her eyes on the prize, which, of course, in the second term was her being elevated to being Secretary of State. In defense of her, though, I don't see how she could have probably taken any other tack other than perhaps resignation, because she was up against the vice president and the Secretary of Defense and sometimes the president, because they were so successful, particularly Cheney, in convincing the president of their views. As Richard Haass has said in his book, Cheney always got the last bite of the apple and usually alone in the Oval Office. So she was up against a fairly formidable duo in Rumsfeld and Cheney, and often trio with the president having been talked into their point of view. So managing the decision-making process was extremely difficult, and she simply voted not to do it and more or less became one of those who goes along to get along.
Well, that sounds like, my understanding of the principal job of the National Security Advisor is to protect the president even from himself. And if it was more about future ambition than the fundamental job, she was a manifest failure. Is that too unfair?
I don't see any other way to judge her time as National Security Advisor. I don't think it was all her fault, but
right.
I think she was, in that position, dysfunctional. I remember vividly coming in to see the Deputy Secretary of State one day, Rich Armitage, and him pronouncing the decision process as dysfunctional to me. He didn't need to do that because I already knew it was dysfunctional. And there are a number of reasons why a process like that becomes dysfunctional. It can be the president. It can be the National Security Advisor himself or herself. It can be the cabinet officers. In this case, I think it was a combination of Condi just not having the chutzpah and the president being utterly naive in most cases, not steeped in anything much in the way of international or security policy, and therefore being easily persuaded by the last person who got to him, which was usually the vice president. So in that sense, there was no adult supervision for the entire cabinet, and certainly no adult supervision and backup for the National Security Advisor.
So it seems from the documentary that George W. Bush finally sort of woke up towards the end of his first term, particularly over the incident where the Attorney General was about to have an operation and he signed over his authorities to the Deputy Attorney General Comey, and Cheney and company were trying to get them to reauthorize a wiretap surveillance regime that the director of the FBI, as well as the top people in justice, thought was illegal. And they were about to resign en masse. The president knew nothing about this. Cheney was telling him completely everything was just because Comey was being a difficult guy. And eventually, I believe Comey finally let the president know what's going on. And the president realized that just before his reelection, he would have had a Saturday night massacre with the entire Justice Department and head of the FBI quitting, and that would have tanked his chances of being reelected. So is that the wake-up call, the first big wake-up call?
Well, I think it was, and I think the second one comes just before and results in November, as I recall, of 2006, his firing Donald Rumsfeld. And that was when, essentially through indirect advice from his military commanders in theater, and from others around him, he understood just how badly Rumsfeld had managed the conflict in Iraq, and so finally got rid of him. I'm also told that that started a fairly significant breach between the vice president and the president that sort of ended with President Bush's refusal, even though Cheney begged him, literally, if you can imagine Cheney begging, the president to fully pardon Scooter Libby, who was, as you may recall, convicted of obstruction of justice in the Valerie Plame case. And the president refused to do so. And I'm told Cheney left in a rage, and I'm not even sure he's spoken to the president, the former president, since then.
Hey, and the president, apparently, towards the end, wouldn't take his calls, didn't want to see him. But right. One of the things that was really disturbing about getting into the Iraq War, and I think in Bush's own biography, autobiography, didn't he say that had he known that there were weapons of mass destruction, he would not have gone to war? But Dick Cheney lying to Dick Armey, I thought, was really shocking. That Dick Armey is for all of his flaws, is an old-fashioned Republican that wanted some evidence and didn't think Saddam Hussein was worth the lives of Americans and didn't believe until Cheney basically snowed him.
True. I think that's all true. And look at the domestic scene, too. Here's Cheney, who runs over to the Congress, which should be unconstitutional, and caucuses with the Congress. Here's the Vice President of the United States colluding with his party in the Congress in order to, for example, get tax cuts passed that the president didn't want, knowing full well that if the Congress packaged those tax cuts in a piece of legislation that offered the president other things that he did want, the president wouldn't veto it, knowing the president's predilection to non-veto. And this president really did not like vetoing legislation. So Cheney goes over, caucuses with the Congress, gets the things in the bill, gets enough into the bill that he knows the president will like those things in the bill and won't veto it, and gets what he wants passed and never tells the president anything about it. This is all revealed, of course, at least in some aspects, in Bart Gellman's book, The Angler.
Right, and the on the attack of 2000 of 9/11, apparently Dick Cheney did not inform the president about the shoot down of the plane that eventually crashed in Pennsylvania.
The archives, Ian, on this incident probably won't be out for historians and others to look out for years, just like so many things that are classified or have moratoria placed on them. I think we're going to see, when we do see all the archives and we understand everything that transpired on that day, we're going to see a vice president who, first of all, was utterly frightened to death. He didn't know what the heck was coming at him. He didn't know what was happening. And most of all, he feared that he and his president were going to be impeached because of what had just happened. Second, after he recovered and began to take some control of what was going on, all kinds of lying went on. They lied to the 9/11 Commission. The Air Force lied to the 9/11 Commission. Cheney lied. All manner of people were telling lies, essentially trying to cover their asses for what had happened on 9/11. The third thing we're going to find is that when they did recover and understood that the American people were not going to impeach them, they then used 9/11 as a catalyst, as an accelerator, if you will, for putting in motion what they wanted to do in the first place, the lead element of which was war with Iraq.
Well, Colonel Wilkerson, I'm sorry I have to leave you. I know you've got to talk with Rachel Maddow, but it's always good to talk to you, and let's catch up again.
Surely. Thanks for having me on, Ian.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, who is the former chief of staff to United States Secretary of State Colin Powell. In 2005, he went public with his knowledge that Vice President Cheney had provided the guidance that led to America's torture disgrace at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, and elsewhere. Currently, he teaches courses at the College of William & Mary and George Washington University. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the banking meltdown in Cyprus and the implications for the Eurozone.
I learned a good way. You taught me everything I know about taking other people for a ride. And I just wanted to take the time to thank you for that gift tonight.